This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Hey everyone, thank you so much for being here again. Welcome back to Hannah Worldwide and Friends, the podcast where traveler, experts and adventurer share their stories. If you want to learn about what it's like living in another country, you want to experience a new culture, or you just love to travel, this podcast is for you. Or maybe you need to get out of your comfort zone, and this podcast might be the inspiration you need. You can find me on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Everyone, please welcome with me Rory Mitchell from New Zealand. Late 2021, Rory decided to pack his bag and just move all the way over to Germany, literally the opposite of what I did. And I'm so grateful that he's here today to be part of this show. So thank you so much, Rory, for your time.
Oh, you're welcome. Happy to be here.
So, backstory of us, we were flatting together in New Zealand when I first arrived here. So it was really cool when I last visited my family, I think 1.5-2 years ago, that I was able to visit you in my home country. So that was pretty awesome. Yeah, so you are a Kiwi. Do you mind telling us a little bit about how life here in New Zealand growing up here was for you?
Yeah, so I was born in Morrinsville, which is about 2 hours south of Auckland, but I grew up mostly in Auckland. So my sort of life in New Zealand was very much the sort of big city Auckland life on the North Shore.
Yeah, big city.
big city. Yeah, I mean for New Zealand, that's big. I was an exchange student when I was 18, and so at the end of my school I went to a country called Latvia in Eastern Europe, and I lived there with a Russian family for about a year. And I had a little bit of a taste of what it was like living in different countries or living in Europe.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, when I got back to New Zealand, I always wanted to go and do that again. So, yeah.
Right. And so obviously it took quite a long time after that abroad year with 17 to then finally take the leap of faith and leave your country. So how has it been from that point on where you felt like, okay, I really want to do that again one day, to actually going through university and doing all of the adult stuff you have to do to set up your life?
Yeah.
And it all these years until you finally decided to go, how did your life look like, and why did you decide when you decided to leave?
So I sort of had a feeling that I wanted to go in and sort of learn a language and experience cultures for quite a while after I came back. I have to admit, like, I never really felt super Kiwi. And although I do enjoy living in the time that I spent living in New Zealand. I think the biggest reason why I didn't immediately leave was basically financial. I was 19, 20, and I didn't have any money. And you need, obviously, to buy a plane ticket, and you need to support yourself and, like, be able to work or do something. And I didn't have a career for myself set up. I didn't have any qualifications. So it made more sense for me to, I decided to go to university, and I did a bachelor's degree at Massey University. And I was just quite poor throughout the whole time just like trying to get by as a student. And I remember seeing, you know, they had these like university exchange programs and I wanted to do them where you could go and spend a year abroad at another university. But I just couldn't find a few thousand dollars to go and do something like that. And so I was never really able to do it. So what happened is I finished my degree and so I had this sort of major in economics. And then I ended up working for industrial research, or what is now turned into Callaghan Innovation. And this was sort of the government innovation agency. And I have to admit that I don't have too much respect for that organization. And the time that I spent in there was very boring and nobody seemed to know anything about what was going on or what they were doing. And it was interesting. I had this sort of job where I guess like I had a decent salary, but I didn't really feel like I was doing anything particularly useful. I had these friends that basically were doing computer science. And I started to pick up an interest in it. I thought, well, can I retrain myself in computer science and become a programmer or something? And that was far more exciting to me at the time. So I sort of had this stable job in Auckland, and I was probably 23 or 24 at that point. And so I decided to just quit my job and go back to being poor. And so the most convenient thing to do at the time was to move to Hamilton, where I had some family, and go to Waikato University. And then I started doing computer science, and I found that I just really, really enjoyed it. And then I just kept going. And after years,
many years,
I ended up with a PhD.
How could that happen? So, and is it correct that the company you were working with during your PhD is still the company you're working with till this day? Is that correct?
So, basically what happened to me is after a few years, so basically I had to sort of catch up a little bit in computer science because I had a degree in something else. And so it took me a couple of years to sort of get decent at what I was doing. And then I basically did a master's, and I had to do this master's thesis. And the topic I chose, or my supervisor, my supervisor was great and sort of talked to me about some hot, interesting topics in data science and so on. And I had an interest basically in programming GPUs. And so we did this project to write this algorithm such that it would work. The algorithm is called XGBoost. So we decided to sort of rewrite it so that it would work, so that you could run it on your GPU, on your gaming PC or your data center or whatever. And that ended up being, like, a lot of people found that useful, which is a really interesting thing about sort of computer science. And one of the things in programming in general that I really like is ultimately you can just make something and put it on the internet. And if it's really good, then people will use it and people will notice, and you don't, in a way, you don't quite have these career barriers that you necessarily have in other fields. Because ultimately, like, people can see your work and then you can get hired and so on. And this one company based in California, it was a startup of about 100 people. They wanted to use what I was developing as a product. And so they hired me during my PhD, and they said, you can keep doing your PhD. During the time that I worked for them, I worked for them for almost 2 years. I would sort of fly a few times a year to California. And that was a very fun experience. They had this little office that was down the road from Google in Mountain View, California. So, yeah, that was a very sort of fun experience. And after I'd worked for them for a couple of years, I got poached basically by NVIDIA, which is the manufacturer of the graphics cards. I started to work for them as well. I left my job at this other company and started to work for NVIDIA. And it was the same sort of conditions that I was allowed to continue my PhD, obviously, but like they would sort of have some direction in the things that I was developing, and that it would be useful to them.
Yeah.
I've worked for them for, I think, almost 5 years now. Part of that was during my PhD, I've continued to work for them since I left New Zealand and moved to Germany.
Right. It's quite convenient if you're in high demand, isn't it?
Yeah.
I will definitely come back to that topic again, to the whole work and where you're currently working at. But what do you think being finally financially more stable was one of the big parts where you were like, okay, I think I'm just pretty much ready to go?
I think in terms of like having the kick to actually move, I think there are several factors. One was some level of financial stability. Another one was the fact that I had, at that time, I basically was, so I've been in Germany for 2.5 years now. And when I left, I basically was just finishing my thesis and I was just going through the PhD defense and these kind of things. And I'd sort of lived in Hamilton for quite a while at that point. And one of the things about being a PhD student is that you tend to have a lot of other friends who are PhD students and things like this, and they all move away. So you end up sort of building all these social connections, and all the people that I'd known through my PhD had mostly like already left, and sort of everything had changed. And to some extent, you sort of ask yourself, am I going to stay here in Hamilton? Or am
I
going to
spend my life?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the other thing that gave me a kick was I had a girlfriend at the time. I think this happens for a lot of people. And a lot of my friends who are in Germany or in other countries right now, is relationships are a huge pull in order to go to different countries. The funny thing is they often don't work out, and it didn't work out in my case. But yeah, it gives you that strong push to do something which is sort of very, very scary and jump out into the unknown.
Yeah. Would you think you would have waited a little longer if you wouldn't have dated the German girl at that time?
It's really hard to say.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. It was a crazy time. As I said, I had finished my PhD at the time. And I don't really know. But yeah. By the way, it was also a completely crazy time, because it was, if you think 2.5 years ago, we were in a COVID lockdown.
Yeah.
And essentially, I finished my work at Waikato University, and then I packed up all my stuff. And then I moved to stay for a month or so at my parents' place in Wellington. And I think we were under COVID lockdown level 3. So the only way I was able to move is we had this exception where if you were moving house that you could move. And so I had this car just like packed with all of my stuff. And I have a dog, and my dog was sitting there and on the back seat as well. And I was going through police checkpoints and things to get down to Wellington. And then I had to basically sort out the visa situation, and which was kind of difficult. Another topic that we may get into is German bureaucracy, which is a fun one. I had to get a visa through the embassy in Wellington. And then I just had to buy a plane ticket and hope that it didn't get canceled or some COVID restrictions didn't happen. And at that time as well, like, there were starting to become a lot of COVID deaths in Germany. So it was also sort of a difficult time to arrive in Germany. So there were a lot of complications. It was a very crazy time.
Yeah, very unique, that's for sure. And I remember I wasn't even able to see you before you moved. And then we haven't seen each other before you moved from Hamilton to Wellington. and then from Wellington moving all the way over to Germany. So we literally just caught up when I came over. So really crazy times to move countries during a lockdown or like COVID pandemic. Like, you never know what happens because we haven't been through a pandemic before. So therefore, now I actually, before I jump onto the next topic with the visa, because I want to get back to that as well, do you think, because New Zealand is such a country with flatting, no one really has apartments for themselves, not much privacy as in the living situation, unless you have enough money to afford a house for yourself. But I know that you have been living with me. I was from Germany, and then our flatmates were from France, and we built really strong connections. And you have been flatting with lots of other people from all backgrounds, all sorts of backgrounds. And do you think that also contributed to that feeling of, okay, I'm feeling like more international. I'm not really feeling, as you said before, like a Kiwi, to just be so open for new cultures and just also be like, okay, one day I'm definitely not living in New Zealand?
I think while I was flatting, and certainly in that PhD university environment, I did live with and get to know a lot of people from different countries. And flatting, by the way, is like such a great way to get to know people.
Yeah.
Like you really get to know people in a way that you see them every day that you sort of don't
and sometimes don't want to.
And the interesting thing about the flatting is that it can be an intensely positive experience, but it can also be an intensely negative experience because
at the end
of the day, like, some people are not very fun to flat with, and we've both experienced that.
Oh yeah, we've been there.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I think the topic of flatting is interesting in the context of Germany and New Zealand, because in New Zealand, like, the housing situation in New Zealand is like mostly houses, I would say. Like, most people have family houses, and New Zealand is mostly suburbia. And it's not necessarily like that in other countries. So I think, like, when you're a poor student, unless you're living in sort of university accommodation, there's not really apartments that are designed for a single person to live by themselves. Over here in Germany and many other places, it's much more common to, I would say the standard apartment size for a student might be somewhere between 40 or 60 square meters in Germany. And the city of Cologne, where I am, is just full of these apartments. That sort of creates a different housing situation. And the other thing is that Germany has a very strong culture of renting. So I think Germany has one of the highest rates of non-ownership in the world. I think it might be above 50%. And a part of the reason why that can be like that is due to strong protections for renters. So in Germany, it would be normal to sort of get an apartment, and many people will stay in their apartment for 10 years.
And like their whole life, pretty much.
Many people stay for their whole life. I don't know what the average would be. You're very strongly protected and you can't get kicked out. And my experience in New Zealand is that, you would move into a flat or something, and then the owner 1 year later would decide to sell the house. And then you would have to leave. And you just, as I wouldn't, I'd say that, like, there's pros and cons to both systems. So, in New Zealand as a renter, you certainly have very little security in your life. And if you had a family or something like this, renting is, I think, inferior. Unfortunately, far inferior to actually owning your own house, just due to the security that it gives you. So I think that's a little sad.
That's true. But you know what's interesting? I always, like, a lot of people in Germany have that idea of one day I want to own a house. That's kind of the goal. But then I talked to my mom the other day and they used to own a house. Now it's my dad's house. My mom moved out and she's renting. And she said, you still pay so much by owning a house and you have to worry about everything. If something breaks, you have to deal with it. It's just more complicated, which of course depends on what you want and what you need and if you're a family. And she said, I'm not going to get back to, like, I want to rent now. I'm not going to be a house owner anymore in the future. I'm just paying my rent and I'm just having it fixed by someone else if there's something going on. And I just save my money, live happily ever after, do my thing, go on a holiday. And she thinks that's the best she can do now. So from always wanting her house, which she got at one point, to now being just the happiest without, it is, yeah, it's interesting how, as you said, when you are renting, you are quite protected. So there's not this instability of not knowing if you have a home in a few months or so.
I think like in a later stage of your life in New Zealand, it probably wouldn't be quite as much fun to do that because you may find that you're moving more often than you would like and you don't quite have that stability.
Yeah, absolutely. And now knowing how both different ways work, what do you prefer? Do you prefer now living in a house by yourself or do you miss the flitting?
I think both have their advantages at the moment. So I have bought a house in Germany. And
congratulations.
Thank you. I enjoy working on the house. And so obviously it's a lot of work to own a house and the maintenance aspects and those things I have come to enjoy. I have enjoyed having my own sort of space here and I have a dog and I like having a small garden and things like this. And I would say over here it's more usual to rent an apartment, but more usual to buy a house. And if you would like to live a little bit further out of the city and you'd like to have a little bit of garden and things like this, then I think owning a house can make sense. So I have, I've had the privilege of owning a house in both New Zealand and Germany because, as you know, I, in Hamilton for about 4 years, had a house there. So as I said, I was poor for a very long time, but then I started to work for these sort of tech companies and then I found that I did have a bit of money and I decided to invest in a house in Hamilton. And the home ownership experience has been quite different in.
Yeah, which I would be like, I'm so curious to hear your experience. So if you would be able to share that with us, how it was to buy a house in New Zealand and then in comparison to buy a house in Germany, I would love that.
The thing about the New Zealand housing market is it's very liquid, which is to say that people buy and sell houses a lot, and they do it with relatively low costs. So sometimes you have to pay like a real estate agent fee or something, and that might be a few percent. But in terms of like the bureaucracy and the paperwork, actually in New Zealand, it's fairly easy to buy a house. Like you need to get a lawyer, but like the paperwork can be done relatively quickly. You can be on your way and you can have a house and then you can sell it again. And I don't know what the current legal situation is, but you wouldn't have to pay tax on it or anything like this. Situation is a little different in Germany. So people tend to stay here. They'll buy a house and they'll stay in it for their life or whatever. Whereas in New Zealand, you sort of, I think for a lot of people that I've known, it's common to sort of trade up over your lifetime or move. Yeah. And you can sort of do that because it does cost you to do that. There's the cost of moving and real estate agents and selling it and so on. But that's sort of not insurmountable. In Germany, you need to budget about 10% of the price of the house for the taxes. So in the state where I live, North Rhine-Westphalia, the tax to buy a house is 6.5%, which is a very large sum when it hits you. So, and on top of that, the lawyers, so in New Zealand, I paid I can't remember what I paid for lawyers, but it was in the low thousands. In Germany, you need to budget like probably more like 5,000 euros for lawyers. You have to go to a special sort of type of lawyer, which is a notary. And there's a lot of paperwork. And then you basically, you need to have your house sort of entered in how would you say Grundbuch? In like the land register, I think.
Yeah,
is the word.
Grundbuch.
And yeah. Then you receive a bill in the mail from the local council for 1,200 euros. And that's just for the pre-entry of the house in the land register. And then, you know, a couple months later, because it takes months, you'll receive another letter and they'll ask you for another 1,200 euros and things like this. And so the cost of buying the house in terms of taxes and stuff is quite high. And the process can also take months. And everything here works by, especially with local councils, everything works by mail, which infuriates me. Once you come from New Zealand, like, you know, and you're dealing with a house transaction or something important, my lawyer could have sent me an email and half an hour later, I could have received a notification on my phone, and half an hour later I've signed it and sent it back and the process moves along. But it's just, everything stretches out to weeks and weeks here because you need to wait for the letters.
Welcome to my country.
yeah. So I think from start to finish, it probably took me, I saw this house and I said, yeah, I basically walked in here and I was here for 20 minutes and it was better than all the other houses that I'd seen. And I said, I'd like to make an offer and here's how much I'm willing to pay. And from that point until we actually got in here, must have been four or five months. And, this was with
right.
all parties being, you know, wanting things to move along as quickly as possible. So,
yeah, that's the efficiency of having a lot of paperwork and bureaucracy and everything needs to be written down and signed and double checked. And sounds familiar.
Yeah. The banks are also a part of this cycle and they're like, this as well. Like weirdly, some of their processes like digitalized, but other parts of it, like the only thing you can do is send the letter. I don't like to think of it as all negative. If you start thinking of negatives when you live in another country, you can sort of go down a nasty rabbit hole. And I think as human beings, we often tend to focus on negatives and forget about the positives that are right in front of us. And so on the subject of buying a house, I can also say that the houses here are like the quality of the construction of the house that I live in right now is just night and day. In New Zealand, I had this house that was built in the 70s and it had sort of a garage extension to it. And it was uninsulation. I know, Hannah, this is something that you find frustrating is that New Zealand houses are cold and they're not well insulated or well built.
No central heating, really.
No central heating. And my house in Germany is a really solid sort of brick house and it's well insulated. We have these wonderful German windows, which are well insulated and they open at the tops and the sides. German windows are wonderful, by the way. And I have this thing called Fußbodenheizung, which is underfloor heating.
Fancy.
I guess it's different from the underfloor heating that I knew in New Zealand. It's in this system, basically, we have a heat pump and it's a special kind of heat pump. It's a ground source heat pump where a hole was drilled very deep in the ground. And it's sort of this very efficient system. And then it pumps, it generates hot water and pumps it under the floors. And so my house is sort of 21, 22 degrees all the time without doing anything. And it's just night and day versus living in cold New Zealand houses.
I miss that, especially for you. It's now going to be summer. And for us, it's going to be winter.
Yes, so yes.
I do miss it, yeah. Didn't even think of it that, like, if someone would have asked me, what do you miss about your home, probably not my first thing on the list, but yeah, definitely a part of it. I miss it very much.
Yeah, I remember seeing this, there was sort of this, I forget the name of it, but it was like a web series, animated series about these two guys that one had traveled from Germany to New Zealand and one from New Zealand to Germany. And there was this one like sort of section where the guy was like, it was like in like Dunedin or something. And he was like sitting in his bed, but like inside the bed and inside a sleeping bag. And he's like, what is wrong with this country? And I have to admit that I've done that before in New Zealand, which is my room has been so cold that I have gotten my sleeping bag out and got in my sleeping bag inside my bed.
Oh my God, I'm not surprised at all. Especially I have been down in Dunedin and was in hostels down there, and I was thinking, oh my God, why is it so freaking cold? But I did not have a sleeping bag, unfortunately. But what I've noticed is it's really common here to have like a heated blanket or like a, you know, the sheet, the under the sheet, having a heated blanket or something, just to kind of cover up that you are not heating your house properly. Yeah. It's like, if you find the name of it, please send it through. Like, it's so on point, really.
Yeah, sure.
Well, that's good to know. It's really cool to have that experience of next to each other, like buying a house there, buying a house here. And it's also great that you were able to do it, because a lot of people move overseas and are not able financially to buy houses no matter where. But to go a little bit back again, because we jumped quite a few steps, on what visa did you come to Germany? So how did it happen that you actually got the visa? What type of visa is it? Are you allowed to work? And then also, how are you able to work for a different company, which is in Australia, but you're living in Germany? Like, all these questions, but we start with the visa and walk our way up to the
Right. So I should first clarify that my company is based in the USA.
Right. Why did I say Australia?
At one time I worked for the Australian, I was sort of administratively working for the Australian branch, but they are a US company. They're a very large company.
Okay.
So in terms of how that works with the company has offices and is sort of incorporated in Germany. So for all intents and purposes, they're a German company. And so what I had to do is, as a New Zealander with a New Zealand passport, you can spend 3 months without any visa in Germany or in Europe in general. But in order to work there, you'll need a work visa. One way of doing that is there is a system in Europe called the Blue Card system. And a Blue Card is given to people that have either like a professional qualifications or degrees. And I think you need a bachelor's degree or higher to be able to qualify for that. And under a Blue Card, you can, without too many questions being asked, you need to effectively prove that your degree is equivalent to a German university. And if you can do that, then you can get a visa, which I think is between 2 and 4 years to work in Germany. And effectively what I did was my work sponsored my transfer. And so I did have an immigration firm to help me. And we basically dealt with the German embassy in Wellington and had to submit the sort of preliminary documents for this blue card at the embassy. And then I was able to arrive with a stamp, you know, a stamp on my passport.
Yeah.
Yeah, the interesting thing was like they couldn't give me the full, they sort of gave me some, I forget what it was, but it was like the embassy, after a lot of back and forward and obviously like sending documents, because they'll only accept the original documents shipped from Germany. I was able to get the sort of preliminary visa, and then I found out when I got there that I still had to like register with the local immigration agency and then get that sort of done. But for anyone else who would be looking to do something like this, I believe an easier route would be just to go to Germany on your 3-month visa and then apply for the blue card once you get there.
Right.
Yeah.
Thanks. So, that's a really valid advice.
Yeah. So obviously do your research. The sort of the only problem with doing that is that some of the immigration sort of offices here and the immigration offices here are frustratingly not all sort of nationalized. They all belong to their own little state or region or whatever, and they don't really talk to each other except by mailing documents, which is a bit frustrating. So,
and every branch is doing it different in every state. It's frustrating.
Yes, yeah. If you do decide to immigrate to Germany, one thing you have to be aware of is that some immigration offices are much busier than others. The best example of this is Berlin. So if you decide, hey, I want to go to Germany, I think I'll go to Berlin and try to get a visa. It can be a real problem, like people waiting months and months, maybe 6 months or more, to try and get an appointment. I've heard about things like, when the office opens in the morning and they sort of have their appointments, but they have a few open slots and people sort of racing into the building, like not queuing or anything, but literally racing each other to try and get in the building to get an appointment. I would also say that Berlin is a notoriously hard place to find an apartment.
Yeah, it's very tough.
Thing about Germany is that while we have this great renter protection and stuff for apartments, in major cities it can be very, very tough to find an apartment. So if you do think about coming to Germany, think a little bit about which place you would like to go, and some places will be easier than others.
Yeah, definitely everything has the pros and cons. Like being in a bigger city where lots of immigrants are, it might be easier to, find a place to belong to and have new people, make friends. But also, as you said, it's just so hard because there are so many people. And even the locals are trying to find housing and flats, and it's not easy. Yeah, and the prices just go up like crazy because they can.
That's another really good point that you bring up, which is like when you move to a new country, you also need to find a sense of belonging. And imagine that like not a lot of people that don't live in Germany speak German. So many of the people that will be coming to Germany will be starting from close to zero in terms of their German language ability. Yeah. And if you move to a small town, a Dorf, I would call it here, in the countryside, people are going to tend to be older and they're only going to speak German. And you can have a very hard time in that situation, sort of building a life for yourself and building connections and things like this. It can be a little bit easier to go to some of the bigger centers, but then you have to fight this battle with housing and things.
Yeah.
So I don't want to scare anyone off from doing this because it's all possible to do, but they are the challenges.
It's definitely good to keep in mind, because having an optimistic vision is one thing, but then just being realistic about the factors which are part of the country you are trying to go to. Because it is also clearly the case that in the bigger cities, it's more expensive. And if you move a little bit outside, then it might be a little bit cheaper. But then you also, if you are living, for example, in Berlin, on the edges of the city, then you might travel 2 hours to go to work every day. So, and in your case, as you mentioned before we started the recording, you are now not in the main city of Cologne anymore. You moved a little bit outside just to have a little bit of peace and just a nice house, which, it's pretty cool how your life turned out so far. Yeah.
I think the other interesting thing about moving to a country like Germany is language. I think language is a really interesting topic. So if you're in New Zealand and or any other country and you want to move, you have some choices. You can go to an English-speaking country, like a lot of people go to England or Canada or the USA. And there definitely are some sort of interesting cultural differences there. And but in my case, I really felt that I wanted to learn a language because I felt like it wasn't something that I had done before and I wanted to see if I could do it. Because I've known people that were very good at languages. And so I had known people that had learned languages and I thought, you know, it's, I want to be able to do that. I want that challenge. I basically had a Duolingo level knowledge of German. And you find how very little that is once you move to the country. So learning a new language has been very fun, but also like very, very challenging, and it ended up being more work than I thought it would be. I thought that German might be an easy language because if you sort of read some German or whatever, you may be able to find some commonalities between English and German, and they share a lot of vocabulary, a lot of words are the same, but it's sort of it's a little bit of a false friend. It's the grammatical structure of the language and everything like that is much different, and it creates a lot of work.
Yeah. So have you taken another course?
So my approach to learning German is I have a job and I'm sort of a remote worker who works internationally. So my job is in English. So I spend my days speaking a lot of English. So what I ended up doing was taking evening courses. So I spent probably between 3 and 4 hours a week at classes and then a little bit of homework. So my sort of German learning experience has been maybe a little bit slower than if you went like full immersion. So people that do like full immersion can learn a language really quickly. Especially things like exchange students in particular, because they sort of go to a school and they're just bombarded with the language for 8 hours a day and you have nowhere to go and you can't escape it. For those of us that aren't in that situation or don't work German jobs, you have to force yourself to go and like do things in order to be more exposed to the language. You sort of get exposed to the language to some degree just by being here. Because like if you want to take the train, you have to understand what the signs mean and things like this. So in your case, Hannah, yours, I would say like for non-English speakers moving to English speaking countries, it would be a case of probably full immersion, would you say?
Yeah,
because
pretty
you have
much.
To work and do everything in English.
Yeah, and I have to say it helped me a lot. My English wasn't super bad. I think like I had not Duolingo type of level English.
Yeah, I'd say most Germans sort of have studied for like 4 or 5 years in school or something, right?
Yeah, we have
your baseline is at a reasonable level.
Yeah, we should be able to have basic conversations unless you are out of school, never touching English ever again. Then it's hard and you have this massive inhibition of even trying to talk because you're afraid to make mistakes and you are shy. But once you are getting back into it, and because of me traveling around quite a bit, I kept it going, but my vocabulary was not great. And then being thrown into the deep end and just being able to communicate in English, as you said, having a job where you only can speak English because either there are people from New Zealand or there are people from all over the world and all we have in common is English. So you're right. It was helpful. I've learned so much, still have lots to learn, but it helped me to be fluent, to feel really comfortable having conversations in my occupation, technical English, and having those kind of conversations we currently have where I don't need to think about the words much. Like sometimes I'm still what was that word? But it's now harder for me to speak with my family and friends completely without thinking, what's that word in German? Because my first thought is the word in English. So
do you do you have like an internal monologue in your head? Like do you have a voice in your head? Which language does that work in?
Most of the time it's English now. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting because I've heard from other people that have become very immersed in another country. They still don't lose the internal voice in their native language. But it sounds like for you, that's to some degree happened.
Yeah. I'm not sure why that is. It depends on at the moment I'm a lot in contact with my cousin and we send like 10-minute voicemails to each other. Then I tend to think in German a little bit more again. For example, if I just talk to her for like 10 minutes or I listen to her for 10 minutes, then my thoughts can easily go back to German. But otherwise, if I have a whole week where I'm not talking German to anybody, which can happen, then all I have is English. And I sometimes stand in the bathroom brushing my teeth, having thoughts about whatever, and it's English. And it's comfortable. I don't know. It just becomes such a big part of you that it's... Sometimes I wonder when I talk to someone if that person was German or English, because the feeling it gives me while I'm talking is now almost equal. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
You've been in New Zealand for a long time now, haven't you?
Yeah, 5.5 years now.
So. 5.5 years, yeah.
Yeah, and you will be like that with German one day. But of course, when you are constantly speaking English all day, it's...
Yeah, I've made a lot of progress in German and I feel comfortably fluent. But I don't think that I have the same level of immersion that you do. And I think that will make my progress slower to some degree.
Yeah, which is fair. I mean, also has its disadvantages and advantages. Like, it's not all bad. Like, being able to use English in your day-to-day work is pretty cool.
Yeah. So I've been here for 2.5 years now. And on the European languages grade, I'm probably somewhere around B2 in my German language ability. So... Yeah, I'm reasonably fluent and
nice.
I do a fair amount of things in German here. So my girlfriend is German and we visit her family and everything happens in German. And I have some friends who I only speak German with.
Yeah.
But there is definitely a long way to go for me. And when I read news articles or listen to the news, it's very hard, like the vocabulary and the complex topics that are being discussed and things sort of are still too much. So I definitely still have a long way to go, but
But I can't wait to when I'm next coming over, when we catch up, to actually have a nice conversation in German, but then also give you some comfort and speak some English. Because once I'm over, I will miss speaking English, I'm sure. Yeah. Awesome. Honestly, don't put yourself down, or like, you know, you are doing well and that you are able to speak quite fluent in German. So that's already well done, because you have not been exposed that much before you came over, while I was exposed to English for a long time. So not really, we can't compare that, but you are right. If you would speak all day, every day, you would probably be a little further in that journey. But I mean, it's awesome that you do that. It's awesome that you are capable of living in Germany by yourself, which you did like in the beginning. And now having a girlfriend there, having a house there, like, that's pretty awesome. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Very proud of you.
If I was to give advice to someone making this sort of leap to learn another language, all I would say is that it's just persistence is all it is, really. And as I've said, the rate at which I've been immersed is less than Hannah. And but all you need basically is just persistence and you'll get there eventually. And I say that because it's very easy to get discouraged at the beginning, because when your language abilities, you run into brick walls constantly at the start, and you'll find that German people switch to speaking English with you and things like this, and it's very frustrating. For a lot of people, it can sort of be very easy to get frustrated about that and sort of disappear into a community of people that speak only English. And exactly. I know people that are like that. I know people that live here that have, I know an American that has married a German, and she's sort of given up a little bit, and that's fine. Like, if that's the way you want to live your life. But if you are interested in learning the language, just a little bit of persistence to break out of that bubble. If you come to another country with very little language skills, you will need to speak English, because otherwise you will be by yourself the whole time, right? Like you need to have connections and have friends.
Yeah.
But you also need to be able to sort of break out of that bubble a little bit in order
100%,
to
yeah.
make progress. And it doesn't have to be fast progress, because as long as you do a little bit, you'll get there in the end. Yeah, once you break through this barrier into actually being able to have a conversation with someone, like the confidence building of that is huge.
Yeah, because in the beginning, it will be uncomfortable. It will be scary. It will be embarrassing at times. You will feel awkward because you have an accent. People don't really understand you sometimes. The pronunciation is totally off. People look at you and are like, what are you trying to say? And then you try your best and they still don't understand. Like, it can be such a struggle. But once you, as you said, break through, it's just such a confidence boost, and you are so proud of yourself. You have achieved something so amazing. And it's just to keep going and to not care as much, because everyone else who usually would make fun of you, or they probably speak only one language. So
one thing that I've noticed is that people that are really good at languages, so I've known people when I was an exchange student or whatever that could speak four languages, and it's not that unusual in some countries of Europe. And some of these students basically picked up the language of the region, which back then was Russian, really, really quickly. And I remember myself getting sort of discouraged. And now that I've come back and sort of learned another language, German, I realized that when you see people that are very good at speaking languages, it's not because they have some kind of special brain that is good at understanding grammar or vocabulary. What makes them actually good is that they don't really care that they make mistakes.
Yeah, that's so true, which I understand both sides. I understand the person, because I have been there, who was like, oh no, I can't say that. It's not the right word. Oh, I don't want them to laugh at me. But then also becoming that person who is like asking questions. Hey, why do you say that? Why do you say it this way? What does it even mean? How can I use it? Does it even make sense? Why would you say it this way and not that way? Oh, I have never heard that word. That sounds weird to me. Like, being just curious, and people will be more than happy to help you out as well. And the best compliment I got from a friend, which is a little bit, it was a compliment. I take it as such. As she said, sometimes I forget that you're not from New Zealand. And I was like, oh, thank you. And obviously not because she can't hear my accent anymore, more because we just have these flowing conversations and it's just easy. So, and that's like, all you can hope for, pretty much. So thank you so much for giving us all this advice, and especially pinpointing how discouraging it can be. But to just keep going and you will get there is such a big message. So thank you for that. And I hope that everyone who's listening and watching can take that away. And if they have ever thought about moving overseas and were discouraged by not being able to speak, studies say if you are actually dropped into a different country, you will pick up that language when you're forced to use it. So as you said, the more you are immersed in it, the better, pretty much. So you gave me lots to talk about, lots to think about. And yeah, for today, I would love to end the episode with the quick three questions, which I usually twitch a little bit depending on the person. But for you, it's pretty similar to most of the people I've had. Are you ready for the last questions?
I'm ready.
Okay, one word or one sentence maximum.
Okay.
Cool. Question number one. In what country do you see yourself currently settling down in?
Germany.
Awesome. Well, I will always be happy to visit you when I visit home. Cool. And I want to get to know your girlfriend as well.
Oh, yes, yes. I'll see you soon, hopefully.
Nice. Okay, question number two. What do you miss the most from New Zealand?
Family.
Yeah.
It's a very long way away.
It's too long, to be honest. It would be great if we could, if you pull hard enough from your end and I pull hard enough from my end, maybe we can make it come a little closer. Well, I'm hoping for it, but maybe one day. Maybe Maui comes up and pulls the islands together.
Yeah, pulls the islands close. Or maybe what I would love is faster air travel that doesn't kill the environment. Wouldn't that be wonderful? And we could all just see each other in a few hours or something like that.
Oh, yeah, that would be amazing. It would make life for me so much easier. Okay, last question for you. What do you love the most in Germany?
Beer. The stereotypical answer, but nice. German beer is wonderful. It's inexpensive. It's great. There's different varieties. Not just the beer, but also the breweries and the culture in the different places that you go. When you go to Bavaria, you can drink Weizenbier out of a Stein. When you come to Cologne, you'll drink Kölsch beer out of these little 200 milliliter glasses. The beer is always good, and it has a great culture around it.
Awesome. What a stereotypical answer, but I love it.
Give the people what they want.
You learn quickly. Thank you. Awesome. These were your quick three questions. Thank you so much for your answers. Thank you for all your advice. I'm hoping that someone who is actually contemplating going to Germany might be taking something from it. And especially for me, I'm not able to say much about the visa situation in my own country because I never have to have a visa ever. So probably the same for you with New Zealand, but very interesting. So thank you so much for all your insight, for your knowledge, for your time. It was so lovely to catch up with you. And I hope everyone who is listening enjoyed it. And whatever they do, wherever they listen to this podcast, I hope you have a good time. And see you later. Bye.
Thank you so much. Bye.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.